fleeting glimpses of things seen through a veil, darkly. Do we understand the meaning of these visions of life? Why we are here and how little of our existence we truly understand? Tonight we will talk of these things on The Other Side. Welcome to The Other Side. I'm Jim Harold. So glad to be with you once again. Our guest today is the author of the book Whereafter. I'm talking about Mariel Ford Clark. Since her own near-death experience in 1992, Mariel has dedicated her life to exploring the mystery of life and death. She has studied many cultures where the afterlife is considered our true home. From the various research that she's done, she understands that a belief in an afterlife determines and impacts how one grieves. And she has conducted and conducts a number of workshops. They include The Journey of the Soul, Life After Physical Death, Coping with Loss, and Healing Through the Grieving Process. And we're so glad to have her on the program. Mariel Ford Clark, welcome.
Thank you so much, Jim, and blessings from Ireland. It's a pleasure to be here.
Very good to be with you. Have these topics interested your whole life, or is it something that you grew into, or has this really been a lifetime pursuit for you?
I would say it's been innately in me, Jim, because my grandmother on my father's side was extremely psychic and very gifted. And my brother, who transitioned in 2002, the youngest member of our family, he was extremely psychic and very spiritual as well. And I grew up in Ireland where we were, reared with, phenomena, as we would call them, fairies, angels, banshees, leprechauns. So it was like there was a certain mysticism about living in Ireland. But I knew my grandmother's gift was very powerful, and her gift was always used through the back door. It was never something that was public. It was always done in private for fear of being ridiculed. So I suppose I became a very healthy skeptic of all things beyond the physical world, because I had my own experiences of, communing with angels and guides and seeing lights and orbs. And then it was when I was about 15, I had my first huge spiritual experience with Mother Mary. And I'm not religious, but I'm very spiritual and growing more spiritually. So this was a huge thing for me, this experience with Mother Mary. It has never left me. And Mother Mary is one of the Ascended Masters that works with me now in the course of my work with others and in my healing modalities. So I went off and I studied completely the opposite. I went and I studied science and I became a serologist. So it's great that I have the skepticism behind me and the science behind me as well, because it has given validity to all the things that I have encapsulated in Whereafter. I have taken a very, very pure, honest look at the sciences, at medicine, and at my own spiritual experiences, and they've all been integrated in Whereafter, giving, I think, a very solid foundation for evidential proof that the afterlife really, really exists.
It strikes me one of the most difficult things that we deal with in life is the physical death of a loved one, especially, and I want to be careful how I say this, because it's horrible when you know it's coming. I think it can even be more crushing when you've had no time to prepare for it and it comes out of the blue and, as they say, no time to say goodbye, those sorts of things. And specifically when it's a younger person or just, whether it's a tragic accident, suicide, whatever it is, even those kind of losses seem to cut even deeper, or if you're a parent and it's a child. It's almost sometimes a pain beyond repair. It's just such a tough, tough thing. Do you think that a key to coping with loss is understanding that while your loved one might be physically gone, that they're not really gone at all?
That is such a beautiful question, Jen, and multi-noded. Where do I begin with that one? Definitely how we are in our society, how we have been reared to deal with loss has a huge impact on how we deal when we lose a loved one ourselves, be it in our family or be it in our intimate circle of friends. But what I have found, I suppose I've been very gifted, Jim, where I am known as a spiritual midwife. And I am called to what they call in Ireland the deathbed. And these would be previous clients of mine who would have been ill and their end of time on earth is about to complete. And I'm very, very, very blessed in the sense that when I sit with the dying, and I'm a shaman as well, so I, when I'm called, it is such a sacred and reverent place to be called to share in those last moments is such a precious gift. And I have seen phenomena at the deathbed. If I was to explain to you, Jim, that I can see the two worlds colliding as such, I can see the veils parting, and I can see moments and maybe hours before a loved one who is about to make their transition, I can see who is coming for them, be it a grandparent, be it a mother, be it a father, be it a grandma, be it anybody. It is incredible. So first of all, I would like to say that nobody dies alone. Even if the room where the person is dying probably or is about to transition and nobody is there with them, that's where an awful lot of guilt come in with family. They feel, oh my God, I just went for a coffee or I just went to the bathroom. And why did he die? Why did he die? He's died alone or she's died alone. And that is very, very tragic. And that is a guilt that it just rips the heart apart in the days and weeks after a person has made their transition. But I really want to say and really, really enforce, I've been blessed and privileged, and I'm not the only one. I see who comes and brings their loved ones across to the other side. And more recently, there was a mom. She was sitting with her 12-year-old. And the 12-year-old had had leukemia when she was 9, and she had this very successful bone marrow transplant. And the mom, here we are 3 years later, and the mom is just devastated because all of a sudden the death is upon her. There was 6 weeks notice, and this little girl was about to make her transition. The mother was, of course, distraught.
Sure.
It defies the law of nature that a mother would lose or a parent would lose a child. So this little one, she was in a coma, and she woke up and she was so excited, and she says, oh, mommy, I cannot wait to play with Peter. This is true now. And she said, I cannot wait to play with Peter. And the mom looked at her and she said, what are you saying, Lucy? And she said, Peter has come and he has told me that everything is okay. And you are not to worry and you are not to be sad because he's going to play with me in heaven. So the mother was just beside herself and she thought this was hallucination or the daughter was heavily sedated, which she wasn't. And it was only afterwards the mother took great comfort from this because the mom had had a son, Peter, a few years before Lucy was born. And they had never told Lucy that she had a little brother who had died before she was born. So that has given the mom great comfort and great solace. But, you know, there are other things like, when I'm there at the deathbed, there is a beautiful peace that descends. There is a beautiful, it's like a sacredness, a holiness that prevails through the silences. And it is just a beautiful place to be. And the sad part is sometimes people that sit around the bed waiting for the soul to transition, they're afraid to speak. They're afraid to hold the hand of the person in the bed. They're afraid to sing. I encourage them to sing. I encourage them to speak. I encourage even children to hop on the bed if it is wise to do so, and to sing and to tell stories. But one of the most incredible things I have found, Jim, which is really very precious and very sacred, after maybe years of trouble within a family, the time to make it all up before the person transitions is there, where there's forgiveness. And then that's where true healing. And I've often found the minute somebody has walked through that door where they haven't spoken for years or decades, and, you know, the tears are shed and the hands are rubbed or felt or touched, and they say, look, I'm sorry. And I can get very emotional about that, because it is such a thing to heal now this side of the veil. And it makes it easier for the soul that's about to leave this earth. It makes it much easier to cross over when there's no unfinished business left to be done. So it's very sacred. It's very precious. And I suppose afterwards, Jim, I have a beautiful little kind of sacred space that I use for families of loved ones who have lost their loved one, where I'm always guided by my guides. I'm guided to do a special healing ceremony with them. And especially for those maybe who didn't make it to the deathbed, especially those who weren't able to get a flight, especially in the last 2 years. So there is this beautiful ceremony which I'm guided to do. No two are ever, ever the same, because each individual is a sacred child of God. So no two of us are the same. So it helps the family to say the things, Jim, that they didn't get to say, to say, to create their own little eulogy, to sing the songs that the person loved, or to recite the poetry. So it becomes a very precious and sacred tool for healing, for helping those that have lost a loved one. You did mention earlier there, Jim, also about suicides. Suicide is a thing I work with very, very closely with groups here in Ireland. And suicide is, and used to be in Ireland, a huge taboo subject. And unfortunately, a lot of that has still remained. But I have been categorically reassured by my guides in the heavenly realm that no soul who passes through suicide is ever, ever condemned to hell's fire or brimstone or lack of seeing God. I am assured, and I have been, this is categorically shown to me as well, that all souls, including suicides, are greeted by their loved ones, and they are escorted to the other side. In the difference with suicide, I call them patients because I see them on the other side, and they are held in a, when they transition or leave this world very abruptly and suddenly through suicide, they are held in a holding space, a sacred space that I've been shown in the inner plane. And here they are looked after by spiritual counselors, and they are kept in this, like, for the want of a better word, sleep state. And then when they have enough healing received on their soul level, then they are gradually awakened to the fact, to the reality that they have actually died. And then the whole process, the life you view shown to them, where maybe the challenges got too much for them, where they could have done things differently, or the pressures that drove them over the edge. And so there is a very sacred journey for that soul on the inner planes. And the chances are, and I have been told this also in shows, that a lot of those souls that have transitioned through suicide, they do want to come back again. And they want to correct the wrongdoings, if you could call it that, or master the lessons that they didn't master in this lifetime. So it's a very precious thing for me to be able to see this, because I have it in one of the chapters in my book, one of the sections, that a message that I received from a gentleman who ended his life through suicide, from his family and from his mom. So I have had the privilege, and I have the privilege of being able to commune with souls that have transitioned this way as well, Jim.
In the book, you talk about the silver cord. Can you talk about your experiences with the silver cord and explain what the silver cord is?
They put it this way, Jen. Everyone is familiar with when a baby is growing within the mother's womb. All are familiar with the umbilical cord. This is the cord that nourishes the baby and feeds it, helps it to grow, and gives it all the vitamins and the minerals and the nutrients that it needs to grow within the mom's womb. So when the baby is born, the umbilical cord is cut. Mother and baby become individuals at that stage. The silver cord, Jim, is something similar, but the silver cord is it's the lifeline that actually keeps our physical body connected to our spirit body in the spirit, in our spiritual home. The silver cord is documented for thousands and thousands of years. Shamans, the Egyptians saw it, the American Indian saw it. So the silver cord is the lifeline, as I said. And when we are having out-of-body experiences, which all of us have, even though we may not be aware of it during our dream and sleep state, the silver cord is limitless. It can stretch and stretch out into the inner planes. And then in the morning or during the night, it can return. So when that silver cord is coming back into the body, it's our soul that is coming back into our body. That's, I suppose, the silver cord, for the want of a better explanation, keeps the soul connected to the spirit world. And our soul is that part of us that never dies. The physical body is the body that houses our soul. And so when we come on earth, we occupy a physical body. And we come in on earth with maybe the lesson that we haven't mastered, or maybe something we need to learn, or maybe experiences we need to have in order to grow more soulfully. So the silver cord is huge, and it is so the only time the silver cord is broken. Like, I had a near-death experience, and that was in 1992. And with that my near-death experience, the silver cord did not snap, did not disengage from our physical body. Whereas with a near-death experience, the silver cord comes back, kind of catapults the body, the soul back into the body, and it resuscitates us. We are revived and we hear doctors saying, oh, we have her back. She's back. He's back. So that meant that it was a dark time. And secondly, it didn't snap or disengage. From once the silver cord disengages or snaps, we see the point and we reach the point where there is no return. And that's why there is huge similarities as well between the silver cord and near-death experiences, or the silver cord which disengages at death. So they're common, but they're two different things.
Now, will there be a family reunion on the other side? I mean, I've always felt like, at middle age now, I've had a lot of friends and family pass. And you always hope, pretty much all my aunts and uncles, my mom's passed. My dad's still here, thankfully. But pretty much all the people I grew up with, the elders that I grew up with, are all gone. And it's a sad feeling. And I know that even increases as you age and more people, then some of your contemporaries start to pass. And it gets challenging as you get on in years. But I've always hoped that someday, even if it's temporary, that there's some kind of, what I've kind of envisioned, my thing is I'd love a family picnic. You arrive and there's a big family picnic and everybody's talking and catching up, and that might be overly simplistic, but that would be something that I would absolutely love. Is there any hope for something like that family picnic?
Well, there certainly is. And the funny part about it is, Jim, what I have seen before a person makes their transition already loved ones passed are already in that room waiting and ready to escort the transitioning soul across to the other side. And how this happens from my guides, I am told that when somebody is about to leave this earth plane, be it suddenly or being an illness over a period of time, your loved ones on the other side in the spirit world, they are foretold of your coming. And it is their duty, and it's also their responsibility to make sure that they are there to receive the incoming soul. So it is, it's a very, very precious time when we lose someone as well, because we have so much fear around death and dying. And I think if I was to put it in a nutshell, I think it's the fear of the unknown. If we had an idea that there is an afterlife, if we had an idea that there is a place beyond this physical world, and to realize that we are far more than just this human being. We're actually a spirit occupying the human body. We have come from source. We've come from a God presence. And if we can realize that we come on earth for a short time, possibly some a season, some a reason, as I say, or some a lifetime. And if we could understand that death is just a stop-off point between the heavens and the earth. And I know you probably could say, that's easy for you to say because you've had your experience. And I just don't have that one experience. I've had many experiences of being on the other side through out-of-body experiences and meeting my guides and getting information that is needed for clients or for those that are about to transition. So if we could demystify the whole fear of dying, it would make our transition into the afterlife far, far simpler, in the sense that we can embrace the fact that we are going to die, but it's the physical body that's about to die. The physical body has housed our soul, but it's the soul who is our consciousness. The soul is what has kept us alive while we were here on the earth plane. And to be able to understand that gives us a much easier, passage when it comes to our time to transition to the other side. Also, it's important, I suppose, Jim, to say that it has transitioning to the other side has absolutely nothing got to do with a religion. Whether you believe in God or not, all transition to the spirit world as part of the natural process and order of life. It's like, just as one does not need to be religious to live here in this physical world, one does not need to profess a particular faith or a particular religion to enter the spirit world, because it's so important to remember that it is love, not religion, which creates our spiritual growth. And it is love that is going to be the most important, energy that we experience while we're here on earth, to show it, to give it, to be it. And that's how we will be when we transition. It is going to be on the amount of love that we showed to another, the amount of goodness and acts of kindness that we showed to another. So it won't be about how many holidays that we had or what kind of a nice car we might have at the driveway or, you know, what kind of fancy holidays we've had abroad. You know, none of that matters, because that's materialism. And it's going to be all our balance book, our sheet of karma is going to be all based on the goodness and on the love that we showed when we go to the other side.
Something you talk about in the book, which I thought was kind of neat, is the idea of last words spoken by famous people. I think of Thomas Edison, I believe, who said something along the lines, "It is very beautiful over there," if I remember correctly. Can you talk to us about that? Because I think it's really interesting when the famous and noteworthy people at least in their achievements in this world, kind of give us a little peek of what lies beyond.
Not just Thomas Edison. There are so many, like Johnny Cash's brother, like Winston Churchill, like Abraham Lincoln, Mother Teresa. They all spoke about the light of the light. Or they spoke about Johnny Cash's brother, who was only 15. Or he was, you know, I remember reading Johnny Cash's story and then hearing him speak about his young brother of 15, who was tragically, in a soul accident, which left his brother almost cut in half. And when they were in his room, when he was about to die, he kept saying to his mother, and all his pain, at that time there was no great intervention with medicine, or there was no flying doctors, or there was no kind of a dialing 999. So Johnny Cash's brother, Jack was his name, and he kept saying to his mother, "Oh, mommy, can you see the angels? Can you see them? I can just reach out and touch them." Now, the mom did not see them, neither did anybody in the room. But what they did experience, Jim, was this incredible peace and calm and serenity that enveloped the room. But every single person that was in that room was touched by it. And that, and Johnny Cash later went on to say that his brother, Jack, in the spirit world, was the one that guided him and inspired him with all his songwriting.
Well, it's interesting. I knew about Johnny Cash's brother dying in that tragic accident. And again, we're talking about probably, I'm guessing, around the 1940s. They didn't have anything that could have helped him. And they were, as I understand, they were very, very poor people in, you know, a rural area. There was literally no hope for him. So to think that they had this peace come up on him based on his words and that feeling, that's amazing. I know another, I know another one that I've heard, and I don't know if it's in the book, but apparently Steve Jobs was looking over the shoulder of some loved ones as he was dying, and he said, "Oh, wow, oh, wow, oh, wow." And if I think I'm pretty correct, he wasn't exactly someone who necessarily, I don't think, believed in an afterlife necessarily, if I'm correct. So that's interesting.
But not only Steve Jobs, Jim, but also Albert Einstein, one of our most famous geniuses of all times. He didn't really believe in an afterlife until his equations, he felt, were no longer substantiated by just physical and mathematical explanation. And he later went on to say that love, instead of using his equation, which was E equals, if I can remember it correctly, E equals MC squared.
Yes.
Instead, if we used the power of love multiplied by the speed of light squared, we would end up with the most powerful energy on the planet, which would be limitless, which would be that of love. And when he was dying, he said, "The love, the love, the love." You know, so, and these were people, as I said, and I know I've written about them in the book, and I have forgotten a lot of them, Jim, to be very honest. Well, how about they said, Mother Teresa kept talking about Jesus, I love you. Mother Teresa, she kept saying, Jesus, I love you. Those nuns that were attending her in the nunnery, she kept saying, Jesus, I love you. Oh, Jesus, I love you, you know? So for me, hearing people say that, and those famous people, it's another aspect of reinforcing that there is an afterlife. Because when people see these people, or they have a vision of a loved one, or the vision of an angel, or a saint, or somebody significant in their life, when they see them, and the families that are surrounding the bed, they can feel it, that something is happening. Even though a lot of the times those that are in witness to something going on, they cannot see. I've been blessed to be able to see. And I'm just being reminded here by my guide, Jim, that I did not answer your question. I beg your pardon, in relation to the picnic with your family. They're just after reminding me there. Forgive me, Jim.
Yes,
there is always a reunion, a family reunion. And that reunion will be all the family members that were significant of important in your life. Because bear in mind, not all of us get on great. You know, there's always, as they say here in Ireland, a black sheep in the family, and you may not want to meet them. But then when we are on the other side, there are no judgments. There are no kind of, shall we say, punishments for, because when we're on the other side, we are in the light. We are bathed in the light. We lose all this earth drama, judgment, criticism, resentment, anger, visions. You know, all of those shackles are removed from once we transition to the other side. When we get to the other side, we are bathed in love and light and healing. And to answer your question in relation to the picnic, yes, it won't be in the sense that you'll be eating food and having glasses of champagne, because on the other side, on the afterlife, we are energy. We survive and we thrive on light, the light of God. That is our nourishment. That is our sustenance. And we are given the same kind of level of consciousness when we pass on. If we like, say, the green pastures, if we like the sea, if we like trees and birds and flowers, or if we like music, those are the levels that we will end up in with our loved ones. Because if we are the same vibration, it's all got to do with vibration and frequency. So we are returned to the same level of vibration and frequency that we had on Earth, but in a more loving, heavenly place. If that makes sense, Jim.
Oh, it makes sense. Yes, indeed. And it's been a great conversation we've had with Marielle Ford Clark about the book, Where Do Our Loved Ones Go After They Die? Marielle, where can people find the book and also find more information about all of your work?
Oh, thank you very much, Jim. And it's been a great pleasure and a blessing. So thank you for that. My book, Whereafter, is available on johnhuntpublishings.com. It's available on all Amazon websites and in my web or my www.marielfordclark.com. All my social media platforms can be looked at there, marielfordclark.com.
Very good. Well, Marielle, thank you for joining us today. It's been a delight and very enlightening. Thank you for being a part of the show today.
Bless you, Jim. It's been my pleasure.
And thank you for tuning in. We appreciate it. And check out Whereafter. We'll talk to you next time. Have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye.